So here's my pledge to you. I will be a commander-in-chief that will have the back of the military. I won't trash talk. I won't be a divider-in-chief or an agitator-in-chief. I won't be out there blowharding, talking a big game without backing it up. I think the next president needs to be a lot quieter, but send a signal that we're prepared to act in the national security interests of this country to get back in the business of creating a more peaceful world. Please clap.
How can you not love a state where things like that happen? From New Hampshire Public Radio, it's Primarily Politics. I am Brady Carlson, and I am right in the middle of the action here at Concord High School, where Ohio Governor John Kasich is about to hold his 102nd town hall meeting of the campaign. Today's show has what you need to get ready for February 9th, how to watch the vote counts like a pro, an inside look at who New Hampshire voters really are, and a once-closed primary landmark that's about to open back up. But first, let's catch up on the latest news from the trail with this week's three words. Word number one is countdown. This primary's days are numbered, and so the candidates know if they want to do it, they've got to do it now. And so that's what they're doing, whether it's praising the primary process.
You know who my friends are? You're my friends. That's my friend.
Slamming rivals.
He's not ready. And last night, when the heat went on, he proved he was not ready.
Slamming the incumbent.
Barack Obama is trying to change America.
Slamming the system.
The game is rigged. The deck is stacked.
Vowing to change the system.
So he has a radical idea. You guys in Rochester ready for a radical idea?
Or even just grabbing takeout for campaign staff.
Chicken tenders, terrific. French fries, and some fraps.
Oh, that is so bad.
It's all happening, and it's all happening here. Well, mostly here. A few candidates did venture out of state. Hillary Clinton to highlight the water crisis in Flint, and Bernie Sanders to appear on Saturday Night Live. But in each case, it was right back onto the trail in New Hampshire. And every candidate has been dodging snowstorms and squeezing in events, interviews, and appearances ahead of the Super Bowl just to get a little bit more visibility before Tuesday. Now, you may ask, does it really matter at this point what the candidates do in these final hours? Reporter Josh Rogers says, absolutely it does.
The tracking polls post-Iowa suggest that, you know, there hasn't been a ton of movement, but it also suggests that there are a lot of people still trying to make up their mind.
Word number two is all about those late deciding voters closing, as in closing arguments. The latest CNN WMUR tracking poll found 10% of undeclared voters are still deciding which party's primary to vote in, much less which candidate they'll vote for. So the candidates are making a range of final pitches to voters. Ideology, electability, new ideas, or tried and true ones, experience, idealism, pragmatism. Dean Spiliotis of Southern New Hampshire University says at this stage of the game, the most important thing isn't which of these approaches you're using, but whether you can show that it's connecting.
The kiss of death at this time before the primary is to have rallies where there are empty seats or a lot of space. You want to show there's enthusiasm, there's excitement, people are eager to see you as a candidate. You want to build that sense of momentum and hopefully peak right on Tuesday.
Word number three is cloudy with a chance of snow. I really should have named this segment three phrases. Turnout on voting day depends on a lot of factors, including the weather. And meteorologist Rob St. Pierre of Hometown Forecast Services says we may get some wintry weather on Tuesday's primary.
There will be some snow showers around. The accumulation shouldn't be quite as much as they will be Monday and Monday night. But it looks like it could be a slippery go for voters on Tuesday.
If so, that might keep some people home who might vote on a nicer day. Still, Secretary of State Bill Gardner is giving this potential wintry weather the same response he gives rival states who want to jump ahead of New Hampshire in the primary calendar. Meh. He's predicting a record turnout for Tuesday's primary, 550,000 votes in all, with slightly more Republican ballots than Democratic ones. In all, a 62% turnout for primary 2016. We're all going to be watching the votes in whatever quantities as they come down on February 9th. But if we want to know what those returns mean as they come in, we have to learn to think like Dante Scala. He's a political scientist at UNH, known far and wide as the go-to guy on everything primary related. I talked with Dante this week in Manchester about how he puts the puzzle pieces of the primary together and figures out who wins. Here's the thing. He says oftentimes the predictions you make only show what you didn't know about the campaign.
Primaries make fools of us all. Pollsters, analysts, pundits, because of the volatility in the electorate, because a lot of them don't decide until the last minute, what we think is going to happen can quickly change into, oh, this is what's happening. I remember in 2008, there was a competitive Republican primary between McCain and Romney, and a Democratic primary, of course, between Obama and Clinton and Edwards. And I remember talking with my assistant, Adam Shibley. I figured the Democratic primary would be over early, but the Republican primary might go into the later hours. So I instructed him, this, keep an eye on that, because we might shift gears pretty quickly. And about half an hour into the results, I realized that what I had told him was exactly the opposite of what was happening, that Clinton had been staging a comeback, that she might win narrowly, and that John McCain was going to win easily, and that was over.
The other piece of it, too, is that there are the actual results, and then there's the way that the candidates frame the results. And we saw an example of that coming out of Iowa.
What I try to do is separate out the spin from the fundamentals. Because you can spin a second place, third place, however you like. But what's important to look at is the fundamentals of what kinds of voters are supporting the candidate. You know, does this Republican, by virtue of what he did in New Hampshire, have a chance at building a national coalition of voters? Or is he going to wind up being one of those hothouse flowers that can grow in New Hampshire, but once they leave and go south to South Carolina, might find a much less hospitable environment, and they're just going to wilt?
Well, now that we've looked ahead, we figured before we wrapped up, we would look back a bit with you. I have developed a little game here called Stump Dante Scala. For the record, I find it extremely unlikely that I will end up stumping you here. So here we go with question number one. This year's primary takes place on February 9th, which is actually late compared to several recent primaries. Which of these primaries was the last time until this year that the primary was held in February? Was it 2000, 2004, 2008, or 2012?
I believe the answer is 2000.
And you are right. Yeah. And then it was only on February 1st. So it was still earlier than what we have now. I actually looked it up. And even though the state law says that ideally we're supposed to have the primary on the second Tuesday in March, the last time that actually happened, that the primary was held in March, was in 1976, which was both the year that I was born and the year that Bill Gardner became New Hampshire Secretary of State.
You were born under a blessed sign, clearly.
And I mention him because I have a question now about Bill Gardner, the longest-serving Secretary of State at the state level of any state. One of the stories that Bill Gardner loves to tell, as you know, is about a visit he got in 1983 from Nancy Pelosi, who came on behalf of the Democratic National Committee to warn him not to move the 1984 primary date up into February. Nancy Pelosi, of course, would go on to be House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, but back then, what was her job title? Was it California Secretary of State Nancy Pelosi? Director of the Democratic National Committee's Women's Leadership Forum Nancy Pelosi? California Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi, or Chair of the Democratic National Committee's Compliance Review Commission, Nancy Pelosi?
I believe the answer would be D, the Compliance Committee.
That's correct, yeah. She came up on behalf of the Compliance Review Committee saying you are not going to move forward ahead of Vermont, and Bill Gardner said, actually, we are.
Yeah, and Pelosi, I was just dumbstruck. Who is this fellow? Who's he speaking to me? And thus the legend was born.
This is a question about the 1988 Republican primary. The winner of that year's primary, then Vice President George H.W. Bush, famously said, "Thank you, New Hampshire." In losing that year's primary, one of Bush's chief rivals, Kansas Senator Bob Dole, famously said, "Which of the following? Nice work, Georgie. New Hampshire sure effed this one up. Stop lying about my record, or when we get to Kansas, you'll wish you'd lost here."
Answer would be C, stop lying about my record.
You got 3 for 3.
Bob Dole had his heart broken 3 times, I believe, in New Hampshire. I mean, I guess time and time again, he was left at the altar by New Hampshire voters.
Your heart has never been broken by the New Hampshire primary, though.
I've been schooled by the New Hampshire primary more than once, but I've always come back for more.
Well, we will look forward to you coming back for more on Tuesday night. Great talking with you, Dante.
Oh, same here, Brady.
That's Dante Scala of the University of New Hampshire. See, I told you he knew everything about the primary. coming up. The independent-minded voters of New Hampshire will not vote for any candidate they haven't met at least 41 times. Or not. It's Primarily Politics from New Hampshire Public Radio.
If you are interested in this podcast, you would probably love our new iPhone app. It is all about politics. It is called State of Democracy. You can use it to get an exclusive daily update on the New Hampshire primary race. You can use it to look at photos of the candidates, find out where they're going to be with interactive maps, and so much more. Go to the iTunes store right now and search for State of Democracy and download it today.
I'm Brady Carlson. Welcome back. I'm here at Concord High School, just ahead of a town hall meeting by Ohio Governor John Kasich. Every 4 years, as the primary nears, we hear an argument over New Hampshire and its role in the political process. Maybe this isn't a surprise, but I polled some of the people here in the audience today, and they think things are great the way they are. Could you just say your name and where you live, please?
Sure. Mike Burgo, and I live in Concord, New Hampshire.
What do you think? Should New Hampshire still be the first primary?
Absolutely. Hey, I think that we've done a good job hosting the candidates for many, many years. As you can see, just by looking around you, you've got tremendous interest, tremendous voter participation, so why not New Hampshire?
On the other hand, critics of the primary say New Hampshire isn't diverse enough compared to the rest of the country and therefore shouldn't be first in the nation. Well, as it turns out, with each of these arguments, things are a little more complicated than they might appear. The question, who are we? I met up with NPR's Asma Khalid, who's been reporting on demographics and politics in campaign 2016. She worked with a demographer at the Brookings Institution to create something called the Perfect State Index, looking at whether Iowa, the first caucus state, was representative of the rest of the country.
But then the question became, well, okay, if not Iowa, then where? You know, what state actually really does look like a microcosm of what the country looks like at this point?
And how did New Hampshire do?
49th.
Wow, so we're not only not first in the nation, we're almost last.
Correct. West Virginia is below New Hampshire by our metrics.
Okay, so where did we go wrong in these five metrics?
Unfortunately, New Hampshire didn't do well on any of those metrics. I mean, it's too wealthy compared to the country. You could say that it's too educated. By no means am I suggesting education's a bad thing. It's just that compared to the country as a whole, people here are too educated. It is a graying population and too secular. And too white. So, you know, truthfully, it was in the bottom 10 states for a number of those categories.
This is very sobering information for people who love the New Hampshire primary, or at least cover it. Asma has some caveats about these findings, and we're going to look at those in a moment. But first, let's hear from demographer Ken Johnson, who recently co-authored a look at New Hampshire's primary voting population for the Carsey Institute at the University of New Hampshire.
If you sum up the New Hampshire population, it's not exactly like the U.S. population, but then most states are not exactly like the U.S. population.
New Hampshire is often described as a state of regions, and Johnson says if you look at the regions rather than an aggregate of the state, maybe we're not quite as different as it seems. For example, he points to data about the kinds of places people live, urban versus rural versus suburban.
About 62% of New Hampshire's population lives in metropolitan areas compared to about 85% of the U.S. population. The proportions are not the same, but if you wanted to see how suburban voters, well-educated, high-income suburban voters are voting, look at Rockingham or Stratford County. If you want to see how middle-sized city voters are voting, look at Hillsborough County. If you want to know what's going on in the rural parts of America, look at the northern part of the state.
So this is sounding a little better for New Hampshire. Urban and rural residents, high-income and low, well-educated and maybe not so much, they're all here. Just maybe the amounts are a little different.
It does not have the minority representation that other parts of the country do. That's a contrast that there's no way to get away from.
This is one of the biggest charges against the presidential primary in New Hampshire, the state's relative lack of racial diversity. Why should a state that's whiter than the rest of America keep winnowing down the field of potential presidents? And the most common response is usually something like, yes, New Hampshire isn't as diverse as the rest of the country, but it's more engaged, it's more politically active, it's better equipped to vet candidates, it's an antidote to big media, it stands up for unknowns and dark horse candidates. All of which may be true, but doesn't really address the racial diversity question. But purely in demographic terms, Asma Khalid says there's an interesting theory about how, in a way, the relatively less diverse population here can be politically revealing.
I've talked to a pollster who does some work here in New Hampshire, and he says you get a pretty good sense of where the Republican electorate is. And that overall, the Republican electorate is very white. I mean, that has potential to change, but if we look at the 2008 and the 2012 exit polls, most minority groups, a majority of people in various minority groups, voted for the Democratic candidate.
Democrats are a different story, though Ken Johnson says one thing to note with those voters is the speed at which New Hampshire is changing. Nearly one-third of the people who may vote in this year's primary weren't here just 8 years ago. That's one of the most mobile populations of any state in America. And he says as the population changes, it grows more diverse, both politically and racially.
New Hampshire's population is less minority than the U.S. population. About 9% of the New Hampshire population is minority, compared to about 38% of the U.S. population. The minority population is growing faster than the white population. I doubt that New Hampshire will ever have large minority representations as the country as a whole, but its minority populations are growing modestly. And as anyone who's been in Manchester or Nashua would know, there is a significant minority presence in both of those cities.
Cities and diversity, those tie together across the country, Johnson says. That the more diverse the state, the more likely you'll find big cities. And the results of Asma Khalid's perfect state index seems to back him up.
Who was number one?
So number one was Illinois.
Which is where I'm from.
So what do you think?
So I was going to say, apparently I went to New Hampshire to go to the primary, but apparently the primary should have just come to me back in Illinois.
I will say, as a fellow Midwesterner, I don't know that it surprised me so much because you know, it has this urban metropolitan center, it then has the suburbs, and then if you go sort of both south and west, it becomes quite rural in the state.
Maybe New Hampshire, in the next 4 years, could just bring a whole city in with suburbs and just plant that somewhere. We've got a lot of open land, so we could probably find a place for it. And then, problem solved, we'll just jump to the top of the list.
That is possible. That is possible. Y'all could do that. Those cities take a while to form, germinate.
I posed this same admittedly weird idea to Ken Johnson, and he had an interesting reaction.
We've got that large, diverse city. It just happens to be on the other side of the Massachusetts border.
Oh, so we just need to annex Boston.
I'm not suggesting that, Brady.
Okay, maybe we're not going to redraw the borders to make Boston part of New Hampshire. And maybe this state won't ever get to number one on the perfect state index. But maybe we can at least say New Hampshire, for all of its demographic differences with the country as a whole, is at least more complex than it might seem at first glance. A big thanks to NPR's Asma Khalid and Ken Johnson of the University of New Hampshire. Coming up, a hero public radio reporter saves a primary landmark. It's Primarily Politics from New Hampshire Public Radio.
If you love politics, if you love the New Hampshire primary, if you love getting that behind-the-scenes view of what is going on here on the trail in New Hampshire, you would love our new app. It's called State of Democracy. It's available for iPhone and iPad. You can check it out right now by going to the iTunes Store and searching for State of Democracy, NHPR. Both of those searches will bring up the State of Democracy app, and then you can download it. Put the primary right in your pocket.
I'm Brady Carlson. Welcome back. We're here at Concord High School ahead of a town hall meeting with Ohio Governor John Kasich. And what's your name?
Bill Rogers.
And where do you live?
I'm in Alton.
We're here at Concord High School, which has had a fair number of presidential candidates over the years.
It's really sort of exciting here to see them all come through. This is where everyone should be coming.
Are there any other landmarks on the presidential primary trail that, like, must visits, do you think, that compares to what candidates get when they come here?
Well, the whole landscape's changing so much. But still, New Hampshire's New Hampshire. It all really starts here.
Concord High School has done pretty well over the years drawing presidential candidates. Other primary landmarks have had a tougher time. In particular, Roby's Country Store in Hooksett. Aside from a few visits from presidential candidates, its doors have stayed mostly closed since its last operator left in 2013. I paid Roby's a visit this past week, and it turns out that old-time store may have some new life in it after all. though it's been closed for years, Roby's Country Store can still get loud when a candidate for president is about to visit. On this day, voters are cramming into rows of metal chairs surrounded by TV cameras and microphones for a chance to see Texas Senator and Iowa caucus winner Ted Cruz. But in the back of the store, behind this filled-to-capacity crowd, you can hear something that hasn't been heard in this country store for a long time. Cash registers, coffee brewing, and patrons buying food.
There's a Stonyfield yogurt coffee cake. Win-win.
That's Amber Enright. She and her husband Joshua just signed a 3-year lease to operate Roby's. The two had each owned restaurants and have been running a catering company, Roots, together in Manchester since 2014. But she says what they really wanted was a community space. And then, last September, they came upon a story about Roby's.
We were in the car listening to NHPR and saying that it was, looking for a new owner. And we're like, that would be just so great. Because I just kind of thought it was this like funky little place that had like not great food and everything was on paper plates and no one really liked to go here. But it was so cool when we came in. Yeah, it was definitely cluttered, but it was perfect.
Working with the Roby's Historic Preservation Board, the Enrights came up with a concept. Roby's would be one part old-style country store, complete with fresh, locally grown foods, one part cafe, one part catering and takeout. Board member Gary Zimba says the plan was welcome news to Roby's diehards, who remember how recent efforts to revive the store hadn't panned out.
We had people in here for about, I think it was 8 years, and it was a husband-wife team, and they just got tired of it, running the business. So we had another person come in and try it. It just didn't work out. These new people, I know her background for years and years, and we feel really good about it. Things are happening.
There is a lot happening now, with some kitchen and storefront renovations going on in between presidential primary events. The Enrights are working on some new items for Roby's breakfast and lunch menus, wraps and salads, though they say longtime customers looking for some favorite foods won't be disappointed either.
I think we'll have some of the old standards, just like, I make a really good pork pie, and we're going to have french fries.
We're going to have Roby's classics, like the beans and the stuff that used to be on the menu back in the day, as well as some of our new ideas.
The goal is to open Roby's full-time again by March. An online campaign to raise money for the launch has been slow going, but Amber Enright says she's not worried. Roots Catering, she says, is in good shape, and Roby's place in the community and in the presidential primary help make for a strong foundation as well.
So if we can maintain that and grow from there, I think it's going to be a win-win. In bringing back the produce and bringing back, local artisans and local crafters and possibly having a farmer's market outside, business is going to be great.
And if the guy who won the Iowa caucus 3 nights ago happens to stop by, then...
That would be great.
All this talk of food has made me hungry. I'm going to go see if I can find a candidate who's shaking hands at a diner. So that's all for this edition of the show. We'll be back with you right after the primary to wrap it all up. In the meantime, you can catch all our past episodes on iTunes, Audioboom, and NHPR.org. You can review the show on any of those spots or send me a tweet. I'm at Brady Carlson, all one word. We had help this week from Sarah Ashworth, Dan Barrick, Rebecca Lavoie, and Brett Neely. I'm Brady Carlson at Concord High School, just days ahead of the New Hampshire primary. Thanks again for listening to Primarily Politics from New Hampshire Public Radio.